Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
João Félix tal como venía, Rui Silva se va, João Félix, gol, 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 toma, 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 João Félix se fue, João Félix, qué bueno, cómo robó ese balón, cómo se metió prácticamente sin ángulo y batió a su compatriota Rui Silva, marca João, marca João, marca João, marca João Félix para el Barça, Barça 1, João Félix, Real Betis Balompié 0.
Welcome along to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. My name is Rudy Barlow. I'm joined by Roman de Arguer after a really fun weekend in La Liga. We've seen quite a few goals in some games. We've seen some interesting results. There's a lot of talking points this weekend in Spain. But I think, Roman, and I'll ask you how you are as well to start off with, I imagine quite good because you were at Montjuic on Saturday night to see Barcelona win 5-0 against Manuel Pellegrini's Real Betis. Just how was the mood at Montjuic and how is your mood as a result?
Well, you can imagine. I mean, with that result, everybody really enjoyed the game. Compared to the previous game against Cádiz, you can tell there's a big difference in terms of the atmosphere, the amount of people, that there was much more people at the stadium. I think there was less tourists maybe because that first game was still in August, a lot of people I think still were out of Barcelona, so I mean the crowd wasn't the usual crowd, but then in this game you could feel a different vibe, you know, you could feel more local people, you could feel even the stand that's full of people that cheer the whole game, La Grada de Animación, that was full compared to the last game against Cádiz, so it was good to see a very different atmosphere, and of course with every single goal people got more and more hyped up, and it was so much fun, you know, to see not just Barca play well, but also to see people enjoying themselves, because it has been a bit of a doubtful start, we could say, to the season for Barca, where they have gotten most of the results they've needed, but still the football maybe hadn't been as entertaining or as spectacular as people would expect with the squad we have. But now, I mean, this game really confirmed that we can play well, and against a decent side like Betis. I mean, we're not talking about a table at the bottom of the standings. We're talking about a team that's supposedly fighting for Europe and that has a decent squad. So, I mean, it's good to get these results.
Yeah, plenty to come. There was a big upset for Atletico Madrid, which we'll come on to. Rafa Benitez set an unwanted record. Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, we'll come on to in the second half of the show, as well as Pacheta's first game in charge of Villarreal. But just sticking with Barcelona, as you say, this was quite an important performance, I think. I mean, against Cardiff, you say kind of like pre-season kind of feel, they kind of shook that off. I mean, there's been doubts about kind of some of the signings and the Joao's debut, Joao Felix and Joao Cancelo. Just what was it like in person? Because certainly from a distance, it looked like they really improved things for Barcelona.
Yeah, I think both Joao's were really good. Especially, I'd say Cancelo was very important for us because we've really missed a proper right back for a very long time. And having him, you can tell there's a big difference. I mean, his capabilities are much better than the ones maybe Sergio Roberto has or other or Dest or whoever played in that position has, you know. So I mean, it's really a boost for the team. He was really good. He got his goal at the end. He was also moving a lot towards the middle, towards the center, to combine with the midfielders, providing from there, which was something interesting to see. Not as much moving up the wing as maybe you'd have expected at first, but Xavi has other ideas, and Cancelo can really adapt to all of these situations. You know, he's got that quality that Barca really needed. And on the other hand, Joao Felix, you could see him trying. You know, I mean, at the beginning, he tried to get past a couple of players. It didn't work out, but he just kept insisting. And in the end, you know, he started to combine better with his teammates. You could tell he has a different confidence from where he was when he was back at Atletico these last few seasons. And I mean, it paid off with a good goal. And I mean, it's great to have these two players if they can provide at this level. I think we're going to have a very strong and deep squad to face, of course, La Liga, but most importantly, the Champions League. That's where we really need to step up our level, and these kind of players can definitely help with that.
Yeah, Joao Felix, I thought he kind of missed a couple passes, like you say, failed to get past a couple players, and I think he wasn't necessarily that effective all the time, but just his positioning and his movement, the fact that they had somebody who was willing to receive the ball between the defence and midfield there, somebody to take attention away from Lewandowski effectively, mm-hmm. somebody that Lewandowski could kind of look for around that box, really kind of helped them and made a difference. And it was kind of the first kind of time I think we've seen Barcelona play kind of, it wasn't necessarily quite a 4-3-3, because you had kind of on the right wing, you had Ferran, you had Balde on the left, and you had Cancelo kind of moving into the middle, but then also out wide at times. But it was a departure from that kind of four-man midfield, that kind of really kind of set, rigid structure, which was, at least in my view, partly in order to stop the opposition as much as it was to help Barcelona. Do you think that there's a chance that Xavi now leaves behind that four-man midfield, or do you think that it's going to be a game-by-game basis, or are we still kind of in the testing phase of this new Barcelona, in inverted commas?
Well, I think Xavi's going to adapt a bit depending on the game, also depending on how well one formation is working, because let's not forget, when Xavi came in, he started with a 4-3-3. After a while, he went back to a 4-4-2 because he saw that the team was playing better. Now it feels like maybe this other formation going back to the 4-3-3 helps, even though it isn't purely, as you said, a 4-3-3, because you had, as you said, Joao Felix moving in a lot. It was mostly Balde going down that left wing. So, I mean, he was the fullback, but at the same time, he was playing wide open. And then Cancelo was moving inside instead of going through the outside. And Ferran was staying a bit more to the right. So, I guess in the end, it comes to a 4-3-3, but it's a bit tricky, because in the sense there's a lot of movements there. And as you said, Joao Felix, I think, has a really important role there, helping out Lewandowski, because we've seen him very lonely up there, trying to hold defenders on his own, trying to create maybe occasions out of nowhere. But now he has this guy he can associate with, he can generate. So, I mean, going forward, this looked pretty promising. And we'll see if Xavi, I think he's going to stick to it at least for the upcoming games, because we saw that it worked really well against a team like Betis. So, most likely, we'll still see this formation. But, I mean, there surely will be games when we see a 4-4-2, maybe because we have injuries in attacking positions, or maybe because he wants the quality of Gundogan, Frenkie, Pedri, etc. together. So, I mean, the good thing is that he has the option to choose according to the situations.
Yeah, an interesting point to note as well. Gavi moved back into midfield and was absolutely sensational. He's really, really good, kind of dropping back a little bit more rather than being used as that kind of auxiliary fourth, third striker kind of thing. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Xavi kind of manages that and constructs that midfield, because Oriol Romeo has been very good coming in. Frenkie de Jong seems to have kind of set his place in stone, but then Gundogan and Pedri also kicking around. So yeah, there's lots of options for Xavi now. It's just about finding the one that works best, I guess. Just a quick word on Betis. I mean, Lewandowski, you kind of mentioned there, he had a go and said, yeah, okay, maybe we need to play more attacking players. Pellegrini did kind of play things down. If you've read Matt's piece on the Substack, which you definitely should go and subscribe and check that out. But Pellegrini kind of played down the fact that he'd said that it would have been irresponsible to sell Luis Felipe, their star centre-back. He's gone to Saudi Arabia for $25 million. This game, they started off with Bellerin, Chadi Riad, who's kind of a young fullback from La Masia too, but making kind of his first appearances. You got Mark Bartra in there too, and Juan Miranda. Just how much of a problem is this for Pellegrini? That defensive aspect, this that side of things, it looked really kind of vulnerable here. And as much as I quite like them all individually at times as players, and they're not going to face Barcelona every week, it's not a defence that jumps out to me as being particularly solid, Roman.
No, absolutely not. And also, let's not forget that best moment of most of these players has already passed, I'd say. I mean, I don't think we're going to see the best version of Bartra or the best version of Bellerin, you know, at this stage in their careers. I think they're useful rotation players. I think Bellerin maybe could be started in according to which games. But when you face a team with the attacking potential that Barcelona has, you could kind of feel that this was a bit risky, you know, of a move from Pellegrini, also playing Xavi Rigad, who hadn't had too many minutes, I think, this season so far. He wasn't a starting centre back up until now, and he's still, you know, a very he still has a lot to go through, a lot of football and La Liga matches to actually develop as a proper centre back. So I mean, coming to Barca Stadium with that defensive line isn't ideal. And of course, as you mentioned, Pellegrini did lose a very important centre back just before the season started, and nobody else came in to sub in for that position, or at least nobody with his quality. So I mean, that was definitely probably a bad move from Betis, but I guess they must have needed the money or whatever, and they went for it in the end, you know. So we'll see how it goes for the rest of the season, but definitely Betis aren't maybe looking as good as we'd hope them, you know, so far this season. There's still a long way to go. Anything can happen, they can improve, but defensively it does feel like they will be struggling a bit. And before we move on, sorry, I just wanted to point out from the game that what surprised me the most in the stadium was how when Ferran Torres got substituted, the whole stadium was singing Tiburón, which is shark. And it's funny because this apparently is a nickname that he gave to himself. So I imagine him one day training with his friends and saying, yeah, I'm like a shark, so Tiburón, you know, I feel like the best moment, you know, I'm doing well. And his teammates were probably joking around, saying, si, si, Tiburón, whatever, making fun of him. And now you have a whole stadium literally singing Tiburón, and some people putting their hand on top of their heads as if it were like, what do you call it, una aleta, I forgot the name in English now.
Finn, yeah.
Finn, exactly. And so it was pretty impressive to see. And of course, he was impressed himself, or I think quite shocked to see the whole stadium chanting his name. But it's incredible how a few months ago, even weeks, I'd say, people were like convinced they Barca should sell him, and now everybody loves him. So it's pretty crazy how football changes.
Yes, and Xavi the beneficiary, who now has 5-6 forwards all competing for those three spots and really in form as well. We will move on now to another huge result, and that was Valencia beating Atletico Madrid 3-0. I really did not see this coming, it has to be said. And even though Valencia and Mestalla are a handful, Rubén Baraja definitely has the support of Mestalla, of that young squad that he's got. Hugo Duro at a double, Avi Guerra, another goal for the youngster there in midfield. Just how well has Baraja done to kind of, yeah, get them moving in the right direction? Because after another summer of, let's not beat around the bush, a lack of investments, I mean, selling some of their best players, this is a Valencia side that Baraja's been honest, the chairman's been honest, chairwoman has been honest as well, saying we're fighting against relegation, but they looked very good against Atleti here.
Yeah, it's crazy how the tide has turned for Valencia, because as you said, also I thought they were relegation candidates for sure for me. I mean, I wasn't expecting them to be beating Sevilla, even beating Atletico Madrid. They got another win against Las Palmas. They were about to win against Osasuna. I think they deserved a bit more in that game. I mean, they've been playing really well so far, and beating a team like Atletico Madrid is never an easy task, you know. And you can just see that Baraja is doing fantastically well. He's being capable of using the tools he has, making the most out of them, and really working on that youth system, bringing up those players and making them shine. Because honestly, you keep seeing in a lineup a player you've never heard of before, and it's Baraja just finding a kid that's going to perform and help Valencia. So I mean, it's fantastic news for them. I feel like the fans have really deserved this and been wanting some happiness, you know, in their lives, because it's been really tough all these seasons with Peter Lim and all the things they've been doing to Valencia. And also it's a great result, because as a matter of fact, I read that it's the first win from Valencia against Atletico de Madrid since 2014. So that's almost 10 years. And as a matter of fact, it was Valencia's worst streak not getting a win against another team, with 6 draws and 11 defeats in the last game. So they've never gone so long without winning a team as it happened with Atletico Madrid. And Baraja came on to break, you know, that very bad run. So it's incredible to see them doing so well, and also seeing Hugo Duro succeeding for Valencia. And he's also a player that apparently likes to score many goals against Atletico Madrid, because he scored 42% of his goals in La Liga against Atleti, 5 of his 12 goals. So great result for Baraja's men, great boost of confidence for Valencia, and it'll be interesting to see if they can keep this up, because at the moment they're really one of the surprises, I'd say, of the season for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they did get beat off Alaves in their last game. I think they'll still probably be in and around that bottom half of the table, but even so, like you say, it's very impressive. I think we all kind of expressed our doubts about Baraja when he came in, because he doesn't have necessarily a brilliant track record. But I think right now, even though perhaps that they have less quality than they have in some years, and even though there are still doubts about what they can aspire to now, I think Baraja has maybe made that atmosphere a little bit healthier than it has been in quite some time, even though they're still, yeah, discontent with Lima. And well, I think Paco's back on Wednesday, and I'm sure he will tamper down that enthusiasm.
Just sure.
Coming on to Atletico Madrid, Simeone said this was, I think it was the weakest, if not one of the weakest performances in his time at the club. They were missing a few players. I mean, Rodrigo De Paul and a few others were kind of out here. Griezmann didn't really get into his groove. Thomas Lemar has come out with an Achilles injury, torn his Achilles, so he's going to be out for several months. Ultimately, it just kind of looked as if they were out-competed in this game, and for Atletico Madrid, it's quite a worry, isn't it?
It's a big worry. The last pod I was on, I was actually saying I considered that Atletico would be fighting till the end, you know, to try and win this title, and I think they still have the capacity to do so, but it's really surprising to see how they just dropped off in this game and looked unrecognizable. Even Griezmann, who's been last season's superstar in La Liga and it started off pretty well, he had a pretty great game, we could say, a pretty bad game. And I mean, I'm hoping it's just maybe a matter of the international break, maybe getting the players a bit more tired, maybe a bit out of focus. We'll see if that's really the case. But they really need to pull their socks up, because the Champions League is coming now right around the corner, and they need to get results as soon as possible. So, I mean, they can't really afford to drop points in games like these. And it is worrying to see Lemar going probably for the rest of the season. And they have really no time now to find replacements, I guess. So it's going to be tough if they can't find a way to turn this around. But I think Simone is a manager that we can all trust. He's been capable of going through these tough situations, and we'll have to give him some credit, and hopefully he'll help Atleti move forward.
Yeah, obviously, as we've touched on in previous pods as well, Carrasco now gone, that's a miss. I mean, Samuelino, and he seems to be the one, and Rodrigo Riquelme, I think, started as a wing-back in this match, mm-hmm. but Javi Galán doesn't seem to have won the trust of Simeone, so there's definitely kind of a few kinks to work out for Simeone and Atleti going forward. And it's the Madrid derby next weekend, so there'll be very little time to work that out before that match. But yeah, a concerning result for Atleti, who have looked very solid, as you say, kind of dark horses in the title race. Coming on to somebody else who, it's not been disastrous so far, but certainly less than impressive. Rafa Benitez, Celta, the first side in Celta history to suffer three straight home defeats to start the season. A 1-0 loss to Real Mallorca. It was Morici who got a late goal, towing in a flicked-on cross, and a big win for Real Mallorca, who get off the mark as well with Javier Aguirre. But Jonathan Bamba had a goal disallowed. It was kind of adjudged not to have crossed the line. Rafa Benitez came out after the match, and he's been quite critical of La Liga in general for various matters, but in this case, about goal line technology. I mean, the ball didn't go over the line, I mean, based on the camera angles that we have at the very least, but Benitez has one win in five against an Almeria side that haven't impressed too much so far. Barcelona next, and then you've got a run of Alaves, Las Palmas and Getafe, which is going to be really crucial. How do we see the Celta side so far, Roman? Because, I mean, there's been points where they've looked all right, but the results ultimately haven't been great.
Yeah, and in the end, results are what matter, you know, and what decisions are based upon. Honestly, I kind of feel like they have been quite unlucky in some of these games, like against Mallorca themselves, not just because the goal was so close to going in, but also because they actually generated good chances. They were the better side for me overall. They could have got a goal there at least, or two, and won the game easily, you know, but in the end, fortune wasn't on their side. Same goes with against Real Madrid. It was another game where I thought Celta deserved a bit more. They had their opportunities, and Madrid were quite lucky in the end to get their single goal that gave them the 3 points. So it kind of feels like it's just maybe an extra goal missing there, or an extra bit of luck going forward towards goal. So it really depends on if this luck, in the end favors them at some point or doesn't. Because if it doesn't, it's clear that Benitez won't last too long. Because I mean, Celta can't afford to be at the bottom of the standings with a coach such as Rafa Benitez, you know. And I think the expectations at the beginning of the season were pretty high. It's true that, of course, at the end they did lose their young player who left to Saudi Arabia, which was quite a shock, I think, to everybody. But still, and despite not having him, which is definitely a big miss, I think that Celta should be getting better results, should be getting more points. As you said, it won't be an easy run now, but they have to start adding up those 3 points game after game, because if not, it'll get really, really tough for Benitez, and hopefully things will change around. But I think the football they're playing isn't too bad. I think it's deserving a bit more, and it should, in the end, in my opinion, be worthwhile, and it should provide them certain good results. But we'll see what happens, because football is pretty unpredictable sometimes.
More to come from Benitez Celta then. Just rounding up a couple more results before the Sunday games. We had Athletic Club beat Cádiz 3-0 at home. Very decent performance. I mean, Guruceta scored the opener kind of into the second half after they'd missed a few chances, hit the bar a couple times. And then on his first touch after coming on for Guruceta, Villalibre headed into the net, and Iñaki Williams sealed the win. He was very impressive, man of the match for my money in that match, and it moves Athletic onto 3 wins, a draw and a defeat after a pretty lackluster opening game against Real Madrid. And then Friday night, Rayo beat Alaves 2-0, an easy penalty, and Jorge de Frutos getting his first goal for Rayo. Alaves were a little bit ponderous on the ball. It was driving rain, it was stormy weather, but Rayo ultimately get the 3 points and move on to 3 victories and 2 defeats, while Alaves are the opposite. Anything to add on those games quickly before we wrap up the first half of the show, Roman?
Well, not much more to say, really. I think Rayo were the deserving, got a deserving win in the end, because they were the better side. They didn't need a penalty to kind of break through, but in the end, they got the 3 points. They deserved. An Athletic Club, for me, are in the typical line with Valverde, you know, starting off really well this season. That's something we tend to see with Valverde. And the question is, will they be capable of keeping this up right until the very end? So we'll have to see.
Excellent stuff. We will get on to more in the second half of the show. Of course, that big Sunday night partidazo, Real Sociedad against Real Madrid. Getafe got a bit of a goal fest win against Osasuna, which many didn't see coming. But if you stick with us, we'll be back right after the break, so don't go anywhere.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to the La Liga Lowdown podcast. We promised you the Sunday night partidazo, and there was several more partidazos on Sunday to get to, including Pacheta's first win as Villarreal manager, including Sevilla's first win of the season. But there is nowhere else to start than the Santiago Bernabeu, where we saw Real Madrid pick up a 2-1 win, keep up their 100% record. Joselu and Fede Valverde securing a comeback for Real Madrid, who had gone 1-0 down very early on to an Ander Barrenechea goal. Real Sociedad played very well, but ultimately Real Madrid managed to do Real Madrid things and pull off the comeback, Roman.
Yeah, I guess it's something we're used to, although I have to say it's the first time ever that Real Madrid actually managed to come back in a game against Real Sociedad when they were winning at halftime. So unfortunately, Real Sociedad didn't keep up this good record they had after winning at halftime against Madrid and lost in the end. But I think they had a very good game, especially the start. You know, they looked really sharp. They got that quick goal. Kubo was incredible. It's a pity that goal he scored got ruled out, because I mean, it was a phenomenal strike, and it felt like Real Sociedad could actually do a bit more damage there and maybe just, you know, get a second goal. But unfortunately, from there on, it felt like they let Madrid take a bit more of the momentum of the game. It changed in that sense. After the second half, Madrid came on stronger. They got that quick goal, and it felt like Real Sociedad were a bit more timid, I'd say, in the second half, because when they wanted to, they had the quality to have the ball, to move it around, to get past their midfielder and generate, but it felt like they weren't doing that enough, in my opinion. So I thought that, except for the end where they did push a bit more, that Real Sociedad could have maybe shown a bit more of that quality, because they're a fantastically well-structured team. They play very good football, and for me, they have the capacity to fight against Real Madrid directly, as we saw today. But unfortunately, the result for them wasn't the one maybe they had hoped for.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I think what with Real Sociedad, Imanol Aguajil obviously takes a lot of credit for the way this side plays, and they were fantastic in that first half, as you mentioned. Kubo had Fran Garcia swimming. He didn't know which way to go. But I thought it was a mistake from Aguajil not to be more aggressive in that second half. I mean, you had Oyarzabal and Barnechea alongside Kubo in that front three. It gave them a certain degree of control in the game, but especially once they went 2-1 down, it was a good 20 minutes before Aguajil reacted. And the likes of Umar Sadiq running in behind would have been a threat. You saw Barnechea get a chance late on before he came off. And yeah, I thought they could have gone for Real Madrid's throats more. And more often than not, you see these teams, or teams that come to the Bernabeu or go to Camp Nou when it's still standing. But but you see, if they don't go for the kill, if they don't go for the throat, then Real Madrid or Barcelona, in Real Madrid's case this time, they tend to complete that comeback, because more so than anything, I think it's that the fact that they can fully focus on kind of putting pressure on the other side, that they can really hem other sides in and get that kind of momentum going. Whereas if you're attacking and if you're causing them more problems going the other way, then it tends to kind of break that up. And I mean, credit to them still, they did play fantastically, and it's a testament to them that Carlo Ancelotti brought off his only striker. He had Jude Bellingham playing left wing for the kind of final stages of the game, and Brahim Diaz up front on his own. Luka Modric was brought on. It was really, he emptied out everything to just pack that midfield and try and stop La Real, which, to his credit and Carlo Ancelotti's credit, they did manage to do. Union Berlin coming up for Real Madrid in midweek, but 100% record, coming off the international break, missing a lot of injured players. Kind of looking at the season start, it's maybe not been the most impressive, but even without Jude Bellingham scoring this time, Real Madrid are getting the job done, and that's kind of what's important at this stage of the season, isn't it, Roman?
Yeah, exactly, and that's something that Madrid have always done really well, I think, getting the job done even when they're not in their best moment, we could say. I mean, their start hasn't been very sharp, as you mentioned. They've really depended on Jude Bellingham to score goals, even though this time, surprisingly, he didn't get one. But They're up there still, you know. They're getting those 3 points after 3 points. They're at the top of the standings. They have enough quality, and it feels like it'll just take them a bit more to maybe get into the form Ancelotti wants them to, or maybe they'll succumb and not show the level we expect. We'll have to see, but usually Madrid is just capable of hanging on there right till the very end, and of course they're going to be a very tough team to get past and to win.
Yeah, it's interesting. They obviously, at the start of last season, went kind of 10 games. They won all 10, I think, at the start of the season, and then hit those struggles before the World Cup. Don't have the World Cup this season, so Carlo Ancelotti will obviously be hoping that that drop-off doesn't come, that kind of distraction doesn't necessarily get in the way. And just a final detail on this match, I thought it was really interesting the way that Real Madrid kind of attacked with the ball as well. It was pretty much the same as Barcelona. I mean, there's different players involved. There's obviously Matices, there's nuances. The way that Bellingham moves is very different to the way that some of the Barcelona midfielders move. But in terms of having those two fullbacks really high and wide, and in Barcelona's case it was Ferran and Balde, but you had Carvajal and Fran Garcia hugging that touchline. Then you had that kind of free in the middle, Joselu, Bellingham and Fede Valverde all kind of moving around and making runs and trying to get in behind the fullbacks, and Rodrigo as well, sorry. But yeah, it was kind of very similar to what I saw from Barcelona, with kind of Tchouaméni and Kroos sat behind them, and then Romeo and De Jong, obviously the parallel for Barcelona there. So yeah, interesting stuff that both of these teams, who
not necessarily had the best start in terms of kind of performances and being convincing, but in terms of the way they're setting up or going for similar things. But I will shut up. I am just fresh out of the Bernabeu, so quite enthusiastic.
No worries.
But moving on, there was another big result for Real Madrid's icon legend, you could say, and that was Sevilla's Sergio Ramos, who returned to the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan, a 1-0 victory over Las Palmas. It wasn't particularly pretty, but Dore Lukobakio comes off the bench, he gets his debut goal and really kind of enthuses the Sanchez Pizjuan. Ramos gets his perfect return. There's still doubts about the Sevilla, but right now, first one of the season, that's as good as can be hoped for, isn't it, Roman?
Yeah, I mean, they needed those 3 points badly. I kind of felt it was a matter of time. I really don't see the same as last season happening. And in the end, I mean, they deserve the win in this game, honestly. It's true that the refereeing for me wasn't good. Munuera really had some very bad calls, mostly in favor of Sevilla and against Las Palmas. There was a penalty that for me was pretty clear, and the referee gave a yellow card to Las Palmas striker, and nothing happened there. VAR didn't check anything, and then there were other controversies there that I didn't feel like the referee was up to the standard. But it's true that anyway, Sevilla did deserve the win for me. They were the better side. They generated the most opportunities, and it's what's been happening in the start of the season, that they're really struggling to get that goal, to find those important moments that can give them the points they need. And it took them quite a while, because it didn't come right until the 70th minute, when Lukobakio, never pronounced his name before, got that winning goal. But honestly, it felt like a matter of time. Sevilla have the quality, they have the players, they have a good manager. It's just a matter of getting those goals, and I think it's a matter of time in the end. But yeah, deserved win, even though Las Palmas fans, as I said, won't be happy with how the refereeing went against them.
Yeah, concerning signs for Las Palmas, who slipped to second bottom with just 2 points, one goal scored this season still. And it's only Almeria who are below them in bottom place now. They lost to Villarreal 2-1 away from home. It was Pacheta's first game in charge. He said, "I don't know if I'm living the dream, but I am extremely happy." And 2-1 for this in this game. Akiyemi took the lead for Villarreal, for Almeria. Gerard Moreno got the equaliser, and then very, very late on, Alexander Surlot with a header at the back post, finishing off in a brilliant Alberto Moreno cross. Pacheta mentioned this after the game, that this wasn't particularly pretty, that Villarreal didn't necessarily play particularly well, and then from my point of view, I didn't think that we saw too much that was new from them. But first game under Pacheta, that win gives him the chance to kind of say, right, okay, follow me, and we'll get results, doesn't it?
For sure, and he has to be careful, because we saw what happened with Setien, you know, after dropping points at the beginning, fans were already against him. So this is a massive win for Pacheta, I think, especially taking into account that Villarreal didn't play very well. As you said, after in the press conference, he was like, "No, I'm not happy with how the team played. We didn't have a good performance, but what counts is the victory, you know, and that's what they can take home here." And for me, there wasn't many changes. Maybe I did see that they were a bit more direct, in the sense they were crossing the ball quite a lot to the box, whereas with Setien, maybe they take more of their time to build a play, you know, touch the ball, 1-2s, that kind of stuff, which maybe was a bit of more different things I could see. But of course, it is the first game. We can't really jump to any conclusions. It can take time for a manager to implement his ideas and get the team to play how he wants them to be. But Villarreal, I have to say, were quite lucky to get the 3 points in that game, despite playing at home against a weaker side like Almeria, because Almeria did have some very good chances. There was a clear penalty for me on Embarba in the first half, which, again, VAR, I don't know what's happening lately, that they're deciding not to intervene, because it was shocking how Embarba got passed between two players. It was Capoe and another Villarreal player, who both, I think, even get to touch in Barba's foot, but it is what it is, and it's 3 points for Villarreal, which is a massive, as we said, boost for Pacheta, and we'll see how this continues for them.
Yeah, Capoue back in the starting lineup without Setien. You saw Gerard Moreno in the post-match interview as well, with a big grin on his face. He's here saying that they were happier, and he said that he's more comfortable in the position that he's now playing in under Pacheta than he was under Setien. And certainly, I mean, we've heard about the kind of bad blood between the squad there and the manager. Ultimately, P- Pochetta will have the backing of the dressing room, it seems, based on at least on kind of Moreno's statements and the way that Raul Albiol gave an interview in midweek as well, saying that it's ridiculous that a dressing room could sack a manager, which made me laugh a little bit. But yeah, Almeria struggling, as I say, bottom of the table. There's four more games before the next international break. Valencia at home, Sevilla away, Granada at home, Athletic away, and I am a little bit concerned about Vicente Moreno's future if things don't go too well in those four games. Moving on to the final game of the kind of weekend, we've still got Granada hosting Girona on Sunday, on Monday night to come, but the final game of the weekend was a 3-2 win for Getafe over Osasuna. Really entertaining game, this, it has to be said. I mean, Osasuna hit back twice through Iker Munoz and Ante Budimir. Stefan Mitrovic and Carmona gave them the lead. Maximovic with an 86th minute header from a set piece. Good win for Getafe. Also, Mason Greenwood made his debut.
Yeah, very good game for Getafe. Very good game for the neutral spectator, because, as you said, this is usually the kind of game you think will end 0-0, maybe 1-0, maximum 1-1, you know, you won't get more than two goals, and in the end you got five goals, which was obviously very good to see. And after Getafe got their first goal, you'd think that maybe they would be capable of closing down, you know, because we know that Bordalas is a master of, you know, putting players at the back and closing those spaces for Osasuna to get their chances. But Osasuna were capable of reacting, you know, they got their goal before half-time, and from there on there was more entertaining football in the second half. And as you said, Mason Greenwood got his debut. There was quite a lot of applauding, but also quite a lot of boos, especially from the Osasuna fans that even chanted... it was Mason Muerete, I think, die, which isn't the nicest thing to hear, but it's something that I think he's going to have to get used to here in La Liga, because a lot of people aren't happy with what's happened in his personal life. And I even saw a couple of Getafe fans actually booing or whistling also, which was, I guess, not surprising. There might have to be all sorts of opinions, I guess, in the fan base, although you can tell that most of the fan base is supporting him. But yeah, he had a pretty good performance. He actually provoked the corner that would actually give them the winning goal after at the end, so we'll see how his future here in La Liga plays out.
Yes, one to keep an eye on, certainly, and yeah, it'll be interesting to see the reception he gets in his first away game. That wraps up for the weekend's fixtures, unless there's anything else that Roman wants to add. I will ask him for his moment of the week, whether there was something that particularly stood out for him. I mean, I'm struggling to find something that I enjoyed more than the storm kind of moving into Vieques on Friday night while it poured it down with rain, and watching everyone react to that was quite entertaining. But for me, the thing that I enjoyed most was probably Take Kubo's performance, that just kind of electric dribbling. It was really something to watch, and for 40-45 minutes, nobody was close to him on the pitch. But I don't know if you have anything that stood out for you, Roman?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go for the Ferran Torres moment, because he scored the free kick. First Barca free kick scored since Messi left, so I mean, that's pretty much a big deal. And then right after the free kick it was scored, he was subbed off. And as I explained before, that incredible singing from the fans of the Tiburón for me was something I won't forget in a while. It was super fun.
Yes, entertaining night at Montjuïc, an entertaining story for Ferran Torres, but we will bring the podcast to an end now. Make sure you subscribe to us on Substack. Subscribe, make sure you're on the premium subscription. We'll have another podcast later in the week and several articles. I myself am writing the Tuesday article, and I think there'll be some Bernabeu related content on that. So yeah, jump in there, make sure you're subscribed to us and keep on listening. If not, we'll be back again next Monday, free for your ears. And not your eyes, but definitely some audio content for you. Have a good week, everyone, and thank you for tuning in.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.